This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Hi everybody, Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to another edition of the Eye on Travel podcast. So how bad is it in the world of airlines? I'll be talking with Dan Reed of Forbes with his report on the real numbers, and they aren't very pretty. Next, we'll answer a question that a lot of you have been asking lately. How clean is the air inside your plane cabin? With Harvard professor Joseph Allen. And we'll then cross the pond to speak to one of our regulars, Simon Calder from The Independent in London. Which European countries might be open to travel? You might be surprised. First up, Dan Reed. If you take a look, I mean, travel has become, I've been arguing it for years, now the argument has been proven, absolutely front page news. It's going to stay with us all as front page news for the foreseeable future. And you cannot wake up in the morning without seeing stories like Boeing laying off 13,000 people, British Airways laying off 12,000 flight attendants, and then maybe hiring them back at half salary. Airlines being grounded, airports being closed. And it's continuing and continuing and continuing, regardless of anything else. And joining me now is somebody who follows us very closely, especially in the airline business. He's our good friend, Dan Reed from Forbes. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm good, Peter. How you doing?
Well, I guess I'm okay. I'm not on an airplane, which bothers me a lot, but I will get out there soon, as I suspect most of my listeners will. But before that happens, let's take a little trip down memory lane. There was a time, not that long ago, when the CEO of American Airlines, Doug Parker, said more or less the following: we're never going to lose money again. We're always going to make a profit, even in bad years. You just reported a story today where 30% of their management has been cut, where thousands of their employees are taking involuntary leaves. And that same Mr. Doug Parker is denying rumors that American may file for bankruptcy.
Well, you got to be careful what you say when he said, you know, no matter how bad it's going to get, we're not going to make, and I think he was actually referring to the entire industry, we're never going to lose money again, because he believed they had fixed the industry's chronic money-losing problems via consolidation and whatnot. It was foolish to say it then, and I wrote it in my column in Forbes. I wrote that it was foolish to say that, because there's always something in the airline industry that's going to happen. It's going to screw up your best laid plans. Well, that something this time is called coronavirus or COVID-19, and it's been devastating. And so they will lose money this year. They lost a boatload in the first quarter. They will lose even more in the second quarter. And no one expects them to be profitable in the third or fourth quarters. And it may be a couple, three more years before they get back to even. And even the definition of even has been brought down too. So
sure. And, you know,
it's an ugly situation.
Last week I was on CBS Sunday Morning and reported that just based on the numbers that I've been reading, United Airlines on any given day, although I think those numbers have improved a little bit, but still it was a staggering statement that on any given day United was flying about 10,000 people. United has 12,250 pilots, which means United is flying fewer people than the airline has pilots. That's right. Not a good business model.
No, that would, then you throw in all the mechanics, the flight attendants, the gate agents, the ramp handlers, mechanics, all the office staff. Yeah, they've got they're running like a 4-to-1 ratio of employees to passengers. Not good. It's awful.
It is.
And it's not going to come back to anything close. I mean, I talked with Doug Parker at American yesterday, and he was using the phrase, 2019 revenues in 2021 are not going to happen. They're not going to get close. So the definition of coming back has to be dumbed down because there is no going back there in the short or even near term.
And of course, American is not alone. United's got serious problems. They're going to have to, unless I'm crazy, then they've already telegraphed this, that when September 30th rolls around and they're no longer required to keep everybody on at full salary to get the government bailout money, they're going to be saying goodbye to a couple of thousand people.
Oh, yeah. I think it'll actually be more than a couple of thousand. I think they'll have 3,000 to 4,000 pilots laid off at that point. The pilots will get their notices well in advance of that, but I think October 1 that happens. And they may do it in tranches. I may not do it all in one day, but it will happen very shortly. And if you're laying off pilots, there are usually three times as many flight attendants as there are pilots, so the numbers there will be three times larger. Mechanics, ramp workers, gate agents, office staff, yeah. They're all going to be going that way. And that's a sad reality.
Yeah, Delta Airlines already said they felt they had about 6,000 pilots too many right now. That's amazing when you think about this, Dan, because it wasn't very much. Oh, wait. 3 months ago, we were talking about the problem with pilot shortages. There weren't enough pilots. Well, guess what? Not a problem now. It's terrible. Then you have the bankruptcies and the outright failures. You know, we've seen Virgin Australia grounded in Australia. We've seen Avianca grounded in Bogota. We've seen so many other airlines in Europe going the same route or being nationalized. And then here's Delta that just did a $1.9 billion acquisition, if you will, of LATAM, and they just filed down in South America.
Yeah, LATAM, which of course is a conglomeration of airlines, but the parent company and most of the operating units filed bankruptcy in various countries in Latin America yesterday. Well, Delta owns 20% of them, and they just paid earlier this year $1.9 billion. They will probably get, if they get any money at all, it will be a few pennies on the dollar out of that. I doubt they'll get much because they're shareholders. They're common shareholders in bankruptcies. Shareholders at the end of the line, there won't be much there for them to get.
Okay, let me ask the stupid question here because there's a definitional difference between bankruptcy and liquidation. So if Avianca is declared bankruptcy or LATAM, it doesn't mean they are going to cease to operate and be chopped up. Not necessarily. Which of these airlines do you think has a chance of getting back?
Oh, that's crystal ball stuff, and my crystal ball is pretty cloudy. However, and you're right. There's a difference. Different laws in different countries, they handle bankruptcy different ways. In the U.S. mindset, there is Chapter 11, which is reorganization, Chapter 7, which is liquidation. We will assume all these companies want to do the equivalent of Chapter 11, reorganization. I think Virgin Australia has a good chance of coming back because it is effectively the only competition Qantas has in the domestic Australian market. Virgin Australia will, they'll attract some interest.
Yeah.
Does it come back in the same form? Probably somewhat different, somewhat smaller. They may even change the name.
My thanks to Dan Reed. And now, to breathe a little easier, maybe, my conversation with Harvard professor Joseph Allen on his research into the quality of the air on board your next flight. So I want to introduce my next guest with a little story. And this goes back 20 years ago when, you may remember, we had smoking allowed on airplanes, smoking and non-smoking. And I wanted to find out how bad the air filtration systems were on the planes. So I went during one of their normal maintenance procedures and I asked them to basically pull out the side panels of the planes on the interior and let's check out the filters. It was disgusting. We saw tar stacked up, I mean, completely embedded in the filters because that's what those filters were ingesting as the air was circulating around the planes. Well, we've gone a long way from there. Obviously, no longer smoking a lot on the planes, but the filtration systems have improved. And at the same time, we're dealing with a lot of deep-seated fear right now about travel in general, about your safety in terms of bacteria and the opportunity maybe to catch a virus on a plane. We all know the protocols of cleaning off all the hard surfaces that your skin will touch on a plane, the tray table, the seat backs, the armrests, the headrests, and even the window shades, I suppose. I always like to wipe down the air nozzle itself. But what about the filtration system? Can an airplane really make you sick based on this, the air that's circulating? My next guest may know the answer to that. He's the assistant professor of exposure assessment science. What a great title. I wish I could have used this guy during my single days when I was dating based on that title alone. Exposure assessment science at Harvard, at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. And he's also the co-author of the book, Healthy Buildings. Joseph Allen, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I'm not trying to make fun of your title. I love your title. So let's talk about this. You know, we talk about the HEPA filters that are on modern day aircraft, how much the air is recirculated, how most people don't realize how air comes into the plane, right? It's coming in from the engines. It's then heated, brought in, and then purged. But it happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think most people would be surprised to know that the air quality in the airplane is actually quite good. And I can explain that a bit. And it follows, you know, the piece I wrote in the Washington Post last week that basically said, I think what most people find surprising, you don't get sick on an airplane, really. And that's because what's happening, as you say, you know, we get about 10 to 12 air changes per hour. So that's how much fresh air comes in per hour. On most airplanes, the air is bled off the engine. It's called bleed air. It comes in off right. The engines, conditioned.
And then it's heated.
Yep. And then, that's about 50% of the air. The other 50% is recirculated. The recirculated air all goes through a HEPA filter. So HEPA filters are high efficiency filters, capture 99.97% of particles. And so the air, you know, coming from outside is real clean. 50% is fresh outdoor air. 50% is recirculated through HEPA filters. And it's quite good. And actually, that's similar to what we find in an airborne infection isolation room in a hospital. They get about 6 to 12 air changes per hour, and recirculated air goes through a HEPA filter. So it actually, the time on the airplane is the lowest risk in terms of your whole travel experience.
But of course, there's all this anecdotal evidence, and I qualify it by saying anecdotal, of people who were flying a couple of years ago and the passenger in 3B had the flu and sneezed, and then the passenger in 18A got infected. Is that even possible?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible. And so I want to put it in the right context. Let me just give a little background. You know, I've been studying airplane, air cabin air quality for over 10 years. And in 2013, I was one of the lead authors of a National Academies report on infectious disease mitigation in airports and on airplanes. Incidentally, one of our key recommendations was airports should have a pandemic preparedness plan. But to your point about the question about, you know, does this happen? Yeah, it occasionally happens. The point I make in this piece is this. Billions of people fly. We have millions of flights every year. And if you look at the historical record of the number of times we have an outbreak linked to an airplane, it's very few. And it reminds me a little bit of like an airplane crash, right? If an airplane crashes, it's a tragedy. it is front page news. It doesn't mean air travel is not safe, right? The same thing here. There have been some high profile examples where someone in a seat infected, or we think infected, people in an adjacent seat. But this is one airplane out of, you know, many millions of flights. If the airplane was higher risk, we'd see a lot more of this. Now, to be fair, when people say, you know I get sick when I travel, that might be true. I just don't think it's the case that you get sick on the airplane, because you can never disentangle the full travel experience. Every time you take an airplane, you're also in security queues. You're at the gate, at the jetway. You maybe take a bus, a subway, a taxi. You stay in a hotel room. You didn't have great sleep the night before. And all of these things are going to influence, you know, whether or not you can, you may get sick.
Now, let me ask the obvious question based on what you just said. I get it, because I fly so much on airplanes, about the filtration system, because it was explained to me a couple of years ago, and thank you for explaining it again. But what about the actual air quality at the airport and all the different touch points that you pass through, whether it's security, the gate, my favorite one, of course, the jetway, where you're queuing up? I mean, you can be affected at any one of those points, can't you?
Yeah, that's right. So I think when we're traveling, we have to be hypervigilant. And, you know, the new piece I wrote took the same structure from that 2013 National Academies report and said, look, there are things the airport should do. There are things the airplane or airlines have to do. And there are things the air traveler have to do. In terms of the airport, they should be doing many of these healthy building strategies. I had a book published last month called Healthy Buildings. They need to be deploying these healthy building strategies, like bringing in more fresh outdoor air, filtering the air just like you would on an airplane, higher efficiency filtration. They're also going to need to manage the queuing of people very carefully, in particular at security and in the waiting areas, and try to maintain as much physical distancing as possible. I also think mask wearing should be mandatory from the second you're at, actually on the way to the airport, through the whole travel experience. In terms of what the airline should do, they need to choreograph the loading of these airplanes very carefully. They should be also ending in-flight service. And here's one that I don't think most people know, but our measurements have shown, the measurements taken on airplanes, that when the plane is at the gate, they don't always have the ventilation system running. And
they turn the APU off. Yeah, I know it.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's a problem. I don't think most people recognize that, and our testing has showed, and we know this, right? If that's not running too, now you have a lot of people going into a small volume space without the benefit of the fresh air coming in or getting the benefit of the high level filtration.
Yeah, you know, the airlines are reluctant to do that because it's fuel burn, or they have to be ground started, and the electricity to run that operation has to be hooked up to the plane. A lot of them don't do it because they want to turn the planes fast. It's a very important point. So I think part of what you're talking about is already starting to happen with airports, you know, enacting new rules that you can't even get into an airport without wearing a mask. So it's not a question of getting to the gate to find out you've got to put it on. You better show up wearing it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, it's good practice. You know, I wrote a piece in the Washington Post a couple, maybe 6 or 8 weeks ago, saying, you know, universal mask wearing should happen. There's a lot of benefits. So people shouldn't be leaving their home without a mask anyway. And certainly if you're going to travel, you should be wearing it on the way to the airport, through the entire airport. You know, I think one way that we can minimize risk here is that the air travelers also have to do their part. Like I said, be hypervigilant here. This is a time to have your mask on, be respectful of others, give yourself a lot of extra time, and do your part here. I think it'll be a little bit, the early days will be akin or remind me of what maybe the post 9/11 experience, where, you know, the enhanced security protocols, it took some time to work out those kinks. It's very frustrating as a traveler. I think we'll see something very similar. Eventually we'll get it to be a lot more efficient, but in the early days it's going to be a bit frustrating.
My thanks to Professor Allen. Simon Calder is the senior travel editor of The Independent in London. And, like me, he's almost always on a plane somewhere in the world. This time around, also like me, he's grounded. But he does have his ear to the ground as well, with a real-world report on which European countries may be opening the doors first to travelers. Joining me now, one of our regulars on the show, who normally would be traveling all around the world, but like me, is stuck where he lives, which happens to be in London, where he works as the senior travel editor at The Independent. Mr. Simon Calder, how are you, sir?
Oh, Peter, very good to talk to you. It would be even better to meet up, but I sense that we're not going to be able to do that for, I was hoping to say weeks, possibly even months. Clearly the world from our respective perspectives has changed utterly, and all we can do is look back on the great adventures that we've all been able to enjoy and try and look forward to figure out how the future of travel is going to look. And I know you've been doing an awful lot of that.
I have. And you know, my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that because the UK is expecting perhaps another wave of COVID-19, they're now going to start enforcing another 14-day quarantine restriction any day now.
It is the most bizarre thing. Just as the rest of the world is opening up to tourism, just as the airlines are really getting off the ground, certainly in Europe, they're starting actually quite plausible networks all the way through June and into July. The UK has suddenly said, right, even though we're absolutely the biggest aviation power in Europe, we're going to close everything down. This has exactly nothing to do with science, with medicine. It has entirely everything to do with politics and the fact that the ruling party has been getting less and less popular. They see this as a fairly cheap and easy political stunt. Sure, it's going to damage the travel industry. Yes, it's going to stop people enjoying the freedom to travel that they were so looking forward to. But it's all about votes, I'm afraid. And so therefore it's being brought in. But there has been such a backlash, Peter, against it within the UK, because pretty much anybody who's got any relationship whatsoever with the travel industry realizes it's just going to destroy hopes and dreams and jobs. And so effectively in the past 48 hours or so, we've seen government ministers coming out and saying, yeah, we're only going to do it for 3 weeks. We're only really pretending. So if you can bear it through most of June, then we promise that by July, we'll still pretend it exists, but actually we'll come up with lots of loopholes. And there's already a huge, huge gaping loophole for anybody who flies into London Heathrow. We don't have testing on arrival to see if you have coronavirus, but we've got a much more bizarre thing, which is that you land at Heathrow, which you will know way, way too well. You stay airside. You buy a quick and easy one-hour hop across to Dublin and back. And you in Dublin, you just stay airside as well. But you you touch foot on Irish soil, which means that when you come back, you have bypassed the 14 days of self-isolation. It is absolutely bizarre, but that's what the government is determined to do, and it's upset.
So what you're suggesting, Simon, is if you want to go to London this summer, book a flight to Ireland and then come in.
Well, no, because the UK isn't yet open for tourism, as it were, and I think we probably won't be until probably the start of July, at which point the government will have ended meaningful quarantine, because it is clearly a medically completely unnecessary and economically extremely damaging. So I wouldn't worry about it. But of course, anybody in, say, the US who's thinking, oh, I'd love to go to Europe this summer, you know, even if it's been tough, and even though the world will be different, they're, I'm afraid, going to be put off booking anything yet. And I'd be so interested to know, Peter, how many trips you've got actually booked.
You know what the answer is right now? For the first time in my life, here it comes, zero.
Oh, no.
I've got zero. That's it, because I could easily get on a plane today, and most Americans could as well. There are flights operating. But the problem is, we have right now 100% of the world's destinations having some form of travel restrictions, and 72% of those countries are closed. So they've even closed their airspace. So it's sort of academic to even try to spend time planning something when you know what those numbers are. Now, you're in London. I'm looking at what's going on in Spain. I'm looking at what's going on in Italy and France. Italy is starting to open up. Spain says they want to open up one day. They change their mind the next. The prime minister is trying to do another quarantine. Then he backs off from it the next. We're seeing here economics and medicine at odds with each other, with no easy solution in sight, since there's no global leadership involved in setting the standards that could allow either us to not go anywhere or for us to go everywhere.
Yes, and it's going to be very, very messy rush across Europe. But there's a couple of things happening. First of all, there is a bit of a consensus emerging that Europe is going to kind of open up on June 15th. And there's also a consensus that the airlines are going to start flying proper schedules, which will look recognizable, where you will have multiple flights from, say, London to Barcelona in Spain from the start of July. And actually, we're also seeing an arms race between tourism dependent countries as to who can lure people back the quickest. So at the moment, way in the lead is Croatia, the former Yugoslav Republic, which has a wonderful Adriatic coastline, as you know. And they last week, they called me and said, we're open. All you need to do is get here with an accommodation reservation, because the last thing they want, of course, is people turning up and having nowhere to stay. If you've got an accommodation reservation, in you come and you can stay as long as you want. And sure, life is different, but you'll still be able to enjoy a sunny vacation, and we're glad to have you. And you've also got Italy, very, very pro-tourism, France gradually opening up. Spain, I think we have now settled on the place opening up on the 1st of July. And Portugal, which is so tourism dependent, is basically saying, right, we need you back. And we'll effectively, even though we've got a really good coronavirus record, we'll drop our guard in order to preserve jobs and try to rebuild our economy.
So the minute one wall drops, they all drop.
If you cast your mind back to March, forgive me, you lose all sense of time.
I know you do.
you suddenly saw one barrier after another coming up, and it was getting very, very scary and confusing. And of course, many people found themselves the wrong side of other countries' lockdowns. And it's now happening in reverse, where we're seeing barriers fall away so quickly that quite soon, I think we'll be spoiled for choice, and the countries will be desperate to get us back. The big question is...
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry, please. Go ahead, Simon. Go ahead.
The big question is, how many people actually want to travel? And certainly in terms of going internationally within Europe, I'm seeing a very solid majority who are saying, nope, we've had a difficult start to 2020. We don't want to take any chances. We're comfortable at home. We'll wait and see what happens, and we'll basically wait for 2021.
If you look back historically, whether it was the 2008 recession or even the volcano that erupted in Iceland in 2010, or right after 9/11, the travel industry took out the old playbook and figured, okay, we're going to lure people back by discounting our way out of this. Are you seeing that now?
I'm seeing it a little bit. Let me give you one example. Flying from here in London to Tenerife, the loveliest of the Canary Islands, which is a four-hour flight. So you're kind of talking roughly New York, I don't know, to Vegas or something. And that is going to cost you round trip, including taxis. It will cost you $40.
Say that again.
$40, so $40, £15 each way. So there are undoubtedly deals around, and that is part of the kind of aggressive strategy of Ryanair, the biggest budget airline in Europe. But in general, and I'm sure this is the pattern that will be followed more or less worldwide, the idea is that carriers will be keeping a lid on capacity, because they know that, they're very uncertain about what demand levels will settle at this summer. But they know that if there's rather too much demand for the supply of seats, that they'll be able to raise their prices way above what they might otherwise charge, and therefore start trying to recoup the billions of dollars that they have been losing. So they'll be doing a bit of that. We've even heard, but difficult to pin down, individual countries coming up with all kinds of deals. There was a story going around last week, you might have heard of it, of Japan saying, we'll pay half your airfare and half your accommodation costs. Actually, when I investigated, they weren't saying that at all. They were saying to domestic travelers within Japan, because they're keeping their barriers against foreigners, foreign tourists coming in. They're saying, yeah, you can, we'll pay you 20,000 yen, which is roughly 180, maybe $200, in order for you to holiday in Japan. But they're certainly not going to say, Peter, we know just what you need. It's a fantastic trip to Tokyo and Kyoto and Hokkaido and so on. And over you come and we'll you know, just send us the credit card receipt and we'll pay you half your costs. They're not going to be doing that. Sicily was saying, yeah, we're going to pay, give everyone a 50 euro incentive. I'm not sure we're going to see those yet. There will be kind of backroom deals of the sort where individual locations will be working with travel agents, with airlines to kind of make their destinations look particularly good value. It is going to be a bit of an undignified scramble, if I may.
Yeah, I think so. And then, of course, there's the airport you leave from. We saw all the news reports that Virgin's pulling out of Gatwick and British Airways is pulling out of Gatwick.
Yeah.
I mean, what's going to happen to that secondary airport?
Exactly. Everybody is consolidating around their strengths. And so you are seeing all these marginal routes being pulled. So, for example, British Airways was going to serve this summer Charleston, South Carolina, into London Heathrow. That route has gone. They will be concentrating on the Heathrow to JFK trip. And Heathrow is absolutely the place to be. This, until the beginning of March, was by far the busiest two-runway airport in the world. They were talking about building a third runway. It's now operating from half the normal number of terminals on just one of the two runways, and that's a pretty quiet runway too. So we are going to see consolidation at Heathrow. JetBlue, interestingly, Robin Hayes, the British chief executive of the New York-based airline, is very, very keen on snapping up slots at Heathrow. And already, just one tiny example, the Czech airline CSA, which left Heathrow about 20 years ago, having sold its slots there for tens of millions of dollars, is now coming back because you can pick up slots at Heathrow for 50 cents. It's an extraordinary turn of events. Meanwhile, yes,
it's an extraordinary turn of events if you can get a slot at Heathrow at any time, let alone 50 cents. That's amazing.
Oh, sure. And as a result, the secondary airports are suffering. We are going to see particularly marginal communities, you know, maybe some of the routes serving the more distant corners of Europe. They're just going to go. Everybody will be concentrating on Frankfurt to Madrid and Rome to Berlin and Paris to Vienna. Those core routes between the big cities rather than the kind of fly anywhere you want to at almost any price, which we were enjoying very much in the summer of 2019.
Wow. A lot to think about, not to mention the fact it's going to change the opportunities that we have to travel, not just the price, but the routes themselves. Simon Calder, the senior travel editor at The Independent, always a pleasure to talk to you, sir, and a lot more to talk about in the days, weeks, and months ahead. My thanks to Simon Calder, also to Dan Reed and Joseph Allen, and thank you for listening to the Eye on Travel podcast. For more interviews with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the Eye on Travel podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to listen. You can also go to petergreenberg.com for the latest in travel news updates. Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. And you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? Spoiler alert, it's neither. At Happy Egg, we believe happiness of the hens is what actually came first. Because without happy hens, there would be no such thing as happy eggs. You know, eggs with delicious orange yolks. Those come from hens who are raised the happy way on 8-plus acres of family-owned farms. Choose happy at happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy! big.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover
inside the house there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings early and ad-free starting May 1st with a 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.